Seeley with us. Michelle, what's your date of birth?
3-11-70.
3-11-70, and what's your permanent address?
7509 Terrytown Road, Chevy Chase, Maryland.
And your name?
Michelle Elizabeth Seeley.
Okay, now just tell me about your life.
God, okay, I was born in Concord, Massachusetts. With my mom and my father, and I had an older sister and older brother. We moved to a farm in Maine, and we lived there for a couple of years, I don't know how long. And then we moved to, Halifax in Canada. And there, when I was 3 years old, my father killed himself. He was an alcoholic, and he attended a recovery program for a while, but I don't know what happened. He lost it, and he ended up killing himself. And his death has played a large part in a lot of my life and a lot of my disease and a lot of my problems. And I'm slowly beginning to realize how much of an effect his death and his absence really does have on me. After Canada, we moved to another place in Canada. Then we moved to Colorado, and then we moved to D.C., and I was moved to D.C. in first grade. I was living with my mom, my younger brother Joshua, my older sister Jessica, and my older brother Ian. And we lived in a small house right near Adams Morgan, and it was pretty fun. There was a whole bunch of other kids on the block, so for the first time I got to really be friends with people. And let's see, I think my biggest memory of childhood, the thing I remember most was just being unhappy and being overweight and always feeling frustrated, always feeling angry, always feeling lonely, and always feeling like nobody ever gave me enough attention and that nobody ever loved me. And that those seemed to be the predominant feelings I had in my childhood. And in sixth grade, I moved to a suburb of Philadelphia. And there, things seemed, for about the first year there, didn't seem too good. Then I entered the junior high school. And there I met Maddie Hammond, who became my best friend. And with her, we started doing stuff that led to my active addiction. With her, I don't know what it was. She was just, we always had the best time, and we always had lots of fun. And I don't know what it was about her. I mean, I remember the moment I saw her, I made a conscious decision that I was going to become friends with her. And I did. And we ended up becoming best friends for about 3 years. And we did a whole lot of stuff. I mean, we were crazy. We used to have so much fun. Some of the stuff Maddie and I used to do. We used to steal our parents' cars all the time. Usually we took her parents' cars. We would spend the night at her place, and at about 2 or 3 in the morning, we'd wake up and we'd go put the car in neutral and push it out of the driveway and then go out and drive around. And we'd do stupid stuff, like we would steal for sale, a whole bunch of for sale signs, and put them on somebody's yard. And it was fun for a while. It was with her that I first I drank 2 screwdrivers at her house with her and her older brother Mark while her parents were out to dinner. And I remember just that feeling of feeling like totally wild and totally crazy, and let's see, like how I always wanted to feel. And it was fun. Maddie was an amazing person. I mean, everybody always liked Maddie, and that's why I always wanted to be there, because I remember that, what do I remember? I remember that, as long as I was always with Maddie, I always thought I was going to be happy. that I was always gonna have fun, and I couldn't be happy or have fun on my own, and I had to be with her. And she was my security blanket. I felt comfortable when I'd go out in social situations with her. And when she wasn't around, I learned to use drugs and alcohol to make me feel comfortable. And I always remember wanting to be the wildest and the craziest and have the most fun and being like the nuttiest, doing the weirdest things and the funnest things. And that's what Maddie and I spent our 3 years together doing. After that, my family moved to a suburb of Washington, D.C., and it was right before 10th grade, and a few weeks before we moved, Maddie took me out to dinner. It was like a going-away present. Maddie and her older sister and her older sister's boyfriend and I got all dressed up, and we were going to go into Philadelphia and go out to dinner and go dancing. And we stopped on the way at a friend's house, and we started drinking there, and they gave me a bottle of vodka because that was my favorite drink. And I ended up drinking about 20 shots of vodka and a couple of beers and a couple of rum and cokes. And I woke up later that evening with IV tubes sticking in me in the emergency room in a hospital in Philadelphia. And I found out later from my mom that evening that I'd almost died, that my blood alcohol level was 0.2 points away from being dead. And I remember a little bit about what happened when I was in the hospital. I remember there was a cop there who was talking to me, and he was telling me that I needed help, that I needed somebody to talk to. And I was still drunk as shit, so I just blew him off and yelling and screaming at him and all the nurses. But I also found out later from my mom that Maddie's older sister refused to take me to the hospital, and she an undercover cop found her trying to wake me up in the car, and he made her take me to the hospital. He escorted her with me to the hospital, and once we got there, she wouldn't tell them that I'd been drinking, what my name was, what my number was, or anything. And, God, just thinking about that's really fucking scary that I almost died. Some bitch wouldn't tell these people what I'd been doing. Let's see, so I moved to Chevy Chase, Maryland, and I entered Bethesda Chevy Chase High School in 10th grade, and I started playing field hockey there. And all my life, sports have been great. I've been given a tremendous gift of being able to do sports and do them really well. All my life, I've been doing something. I think the first sport I played was ice hockey. I used to play an all-boys team, and I loved it. It was great. And I used to play softball and basketball and water ski and fish and just do everything. I used to run a whole lot. But so I moved to Chevy Chase and I started playing field hockey. And when I was in 10th grade, I made the varsity team. And I ended up being the highest scorer of the team and third highest in the county. And it was really weird because at that point in my life, I'd moved to this place and everybody liked me. I was really popular. I was going dating the quarterback of the varsity football team, who I went to homecoming with. And on the outside, everything seemed to be great. I was making honor roll every semester, and everything looked really good. But I was a fucking nut inside. I was losing it. I was insane. I hated myself. I thought I was disgusting. I thought I was fat. I thought I was ugly. I thought I was dumb. I thought nobody cared about me. And all I wanted to be was happy, and I'm like the center of attention, have everybody like me. And I remember getting my friends stoned for the first time and getting them really into like smoking pot and doing shrooms and a whole bunch of stuff like that, and which I regret now. Now a lot of them still smoke a lot of pot, and they've tried shrooms and ecstasy and a whole bunch of stuff a couple times. I remember I was walking home one night from a party with a friend of mine from school, and he was telling me that some girl had told him, and they were talking about me, how lucky I am, and how lucky I am that I'm perfect. And God, when I heard this, I nearly lost it. I thought I was absolutely insane, and I thought nobody liked me. And it was just wild to hear somebody say that about me. I started to really, things just really started getting out of hand around Christmas time. The predominant part of my disease at that time was my bulimia. And I started binging and throwing up in about, what was it, the end of seventh grade. And it had gotten better and worse and up and down for a while. And at that time, around Christmas time, it was just flaring. And I ended up in February, ended up being hell, and I stopped going to school. And all I would do was for about 2 weeks is I'd take my mom's credit card, I'd go to the store, buy food, eat and throw up all day long, and I'd drink at night, and you know, rarely go out, but if I would go out, I'd get totally fucked up. And I lost it, and I couldn't take it anymore, and February 19th, I decided that I was gonna kill myself. And I stayed up just about all night that night, and what ended up happening was the next morning I took about 85 Tylenol, and you know, and I knew down deep down inside that I didn't want to die. The thing was, I just didn't want to live. And so
continues.
Don't worry, I won't make a mess. Can I shut this door, Chris?
Sure.
Okay. Okay, so let's see. It's morning, February 20th, and I'd just taken 85 Tylenol. And I knew that I really didn't want to die. I just didn't want to live, and I had this plan that, you know, I was going to take all this stuff, and if I was lucky, I'd end up in the hospital, I'd end up getting help. And if I wasn't, you know, I'd end up dying, and I wouldn't have to deal with this shit anymore anyway, so it seemed like a good plan to me. So after about a half an hour after I'd taken all these Tylenol, I went in and told my mom that, I'd taken, taken a few too many Tylenol, and I felt sick, you know. If you asked how many, I shed about 15. And, she took me to the emergency room of Holy Cross Hospital in Silver Spring. And there they pumped my stomach, and a few hours later, I was admitted to the psych unit of Holy Cross Hospital. I spent a month there, and that, God, that was an experience. The majority of the patients there were older, and were pretty crazy. I mean, there are a lot of people there that just seem nuts. So I had a lot of tension for being the youngest, and I don't know, it was kind of like a vacation. I didn't know what the hell to make of it. I was so fucked up still. And I remember one counselor, his name was Carl, who I paid, like, you know, a lot of attention to me, and we got to be really close. And he's a older black man who was 36 years old. He was married, and he had I think it was two kids. And we got to be really, really close. I just have the biggest crush on him. After a month in that psych unit there, I was transferred to Taylor Manor Hospital in Ellicott City, Maryland, where I ended up staying there for 3 months, a week, and 4 days. And a whole lot happened there. I mean, I went through a lot of changes there. The first place really didn't help me, but you know, I went through a whole lot up at Taylor Manor, and a lot of the stuff I learned there, I'm just beginning to realize how, you know, how it really helps in my life today. I mean, a lot of the shit they told me, I was like, you know, what the fuck are you talking about? But, you know, a lot of it really made sense, you know, now that I have a, you know, somewhat clear mind and think. So, Taylor Manor, though, that was great. I really, really miss that place. And, God, I would love to go back just to visit sometime. When I first got there, I was really, really sick. I was throwing up and I had really bad headaches, and I found out about a week after being this sick and feeling like shit that I was doing this all to myself. And once I realized that it was all, you know, hypochondriac shit, then I stopped and I felt better. And it was just intense. I remember the first day I checked in, this girl had to weigh me with, willing my underwear and my bra on. At the time, I weighed about 107 pounds. And, I was just, you know, I told her, I was, like, covering up my body and told her how not to look because how fat I was and how gross looking I was. And, she told me this later, about a week or two before I left, and it just seemed so funny because by the time that I'd left, I'd gained a whole bunch of weight and I weighed about 120. And, let's see, and I remember when I first got there, I saw his counselor. His name was Charlie. He had blonde hair and blue eyes. He was kind of cute, and he was a bodybuilder. He had a fabulous, fabulous body, but he was really quiet and rarely spoke. And I remember after I saw him that I was going to become friends with him. And that same thing that happened with Maddie, I made that conscious decision that I was going to get really close to this person. And so what I did to get his attention was I totally ignored him. For about 2 weeks, I would not talk. He would talk to him. He'd say hi to me, and I'd walk right by him. Until finally, one day, he came up to me and was like, asking why I wouldn't talk to him. And then I started talking to him, and after that, we became really good friends. And God, he helped me a whole lot. I was able to talk to him better than I'd been able to talk to anybody in a while. And we used to have these conversations. That'd be fabulous. I mean, I'd start talking about my father and I'd start crying, and he'd be talking about something and he'd start crying, and it was really intense, and it was nice. It was really fucking nice. Also, when I was in that hospital, I met somebody, this boy named Ben, who was in the long-term unit of the hospital, who, you know, started dating or whatever as much as he possibly can in the male hospital, and it was really nice. I mean, we weren't allowed to touch each other, so it was, you know, purely an emotional relationship, and it was really, really neat. No cigarettes? Oh, thank you. Very much. Get out of here. It's the only thing. So I'm at the hospital, I'm seeing this guy, and I got to be really comfortable there. I mean, it was really nice, it was really safe and secure. And I really liked it a lot. And I eventually, after about 2 months or something, I improved enough to for them to tell me that I could be discharged. And I left there on June 23rd. While I was there, I was attending the alcohol and substance abuse group. And they'd never told me that about NA or AA or any recovery programs. But we just went to this group, and there's a couple, you know, people in the adolescent unit that I was in that had used drugs before. And all we ended up doing, we would just tell more stories and talk about drugs and this and that, and which just made me want to use even more. So, and while I was there, they told me that I had a problem with drugs and alcohol, but, you know, I figured, you know, what the hell, I was having fun when I did it, so it wasn't really a problem. And I ended up, after I left there, for about a month or so, I didn't do any drugs or anything. And Then after a while, I was just like, fuck it. And I started partying again. And my drinking got really bad. And that summer, I started going to bars a lot with friends of mine. And it seemed that just about every night I would go out, but I ended up getting drunk and getting high. And the usual routine of when this happened, I'd get fucked up and I'd lose something, I'd break something, and I'd fuck somebody. And that was a continuing scenario of all the times that I used. And after a while, friends began to, tell me that they thought I had a problem, and they were afraid I was gonna get some kind of sexual disease or something. And, all the while when I was doing this, it seemed, it was all like a game. It was a high to go out and meet somebody and, fuck them, but always, I knew that it always made me feel like shit, and, now I can see the insanity of it, expecting different results, because every time I go out, I think it'd be different, I think it'd be better, and, God, it never was. It just got fucking worse. And, so the next year I went to, I changed schools small private high school in D.C. And, started playing soccer there. And, I was the second highest scorer of the team. I'd never played soccer before. And that helped a lot, helped me meet a lot of people. And let's see, and I started hanging out with another friend of mine, this girl from school, who again I'd made a conscious decision that I was gonna become friends with. And she was perfect for me. She's another Maddie, she was what I always wanted. She was popular, she was beautiful, she was fun, she was exciting, she would try anything, she loved to drink, she loved to party, she loved guys. And nothing held her back, and she had lots of fun, and so I got together with her and we went insane. And we just partied our asses off. I mean, we were always like the drunks at the parties, and we did have fun. I won't say that we didn't have fun. I mean, it was insanity in a big way, but we did have our fun. And it's kind of strange because even before either one of us stopped using drugs, when we spend like long lengths of time together, like in car rides or something, we would talk about what was our favorite time together. And it always ended up being something that we did when we weren't fucked up. And we thought that was strange, kind of. We knew something was kind of off. And we both felt uncomfortable with ourselves, kind of deep down hated what we were doing and hated the fact that we couldn't stop drinking and using. But we didn't see the need to stop. And let's see, in the summer of 87, we went to a camp that was sponsored by the Episcopal Church of Virginia. And one of the counselors there was in the program. And he held a seminar on alcohol awareness and abuse, and Kari and I went, and we listened, and by the end of the seminar we both knew that those people that he was describing were us. And at the time, again, my eating was real predominant, and I thought that I didn't have a problem with drugs. I thought my problem was food. And so they sent Kari off to a rehab, and I was supposed to go to eating disorders clinic, and I ended up not going, but Kari didn't go to the rehab. And I remember before she left, I decided I was gonna stop using, and I didn't, and I decided a week later I'd stop using, and I didn't, and I went on and on a week later, and when she gets back, I'll stop. Well, fuck it, she's back, I'll keep using. And I didn't stop, and She mentioned something to me, how she thought I had a problem. And I said, you know, I agreed with her, thought maybe she was right, but there was nothing big. And people suggested to her at her rehab that she attend a recovery program. And I started going to meetings with her, just, you know, so I could hang out with her. And God, I really liked what I heard, and I kept going. And about a week after I started going to meetings, I stopped using, and I got a sponsor, and I started attending meetings every night, and my life got better. And that was about a year ago this time. And when I was on fucking cloud nine for about the first month, I thought it was great. I thought I was never gonna use drugs again. I didn't want to. And I was really fucking happy. And then eventually things got kind of shitty. So I don't know. I mean, then like life sunk in, and I was living at home at the time, and my eating was really bad again. Because my disease had no other, I mean, I removed the drugs and the alcohol from my disease, so it turned to other forms. It turned to compulsive shopping and compulsive eating. And and I just became really, really miserable. I felt really, really lonely and really frustrated, and like nobody loved me, like nobody cared about me. And I went through a really hard time last year. I mean, with school, for the first time, I really had to work, and I was really frustrated with that. And by about December, I just had totally lost it again, and I was gonna go back in the hospital for my eating. And what ended up happening was I met with a shrink that I was seeing and my mom, and he suggested that I move out of the house. And I moved into an apartment with a friend of mine in the program. And as soon as I moved out, my eating got better. And I was much happier, and I started feeling really good and really happy. And oh God, dude, in that apartment, I've been through so much shit since I've lived in that fucking apartment. The person I moved in with was a recovering heroin addict, and she relapsed. She's relapsed several times since I've lived there. She's been hospitalized, and she's had a real, real hard time staying clean. Her old boyfriend is a hardcore heroin addict, broke in the apartment several times and stole a bunch of money of mine and a watch of mine. Another thing that happened when I moved out of my mom's house was my addiction, since it was no longer in the food aspect of my life or in the drugs or the alcohol or the money, it changed to men. And I started, you know, seeing, you know, one guy after the other. I'd be dating one guy for like 2 or 3 weeks, and I started like obsessively and compulsively seeing people and having sex. And on the point I am right now in my recovery is that, you know, I hit a bottom with men and relationships and sex. You know, I see now how much of a part of the disease it is. And, you know, I just, you know, it doesn't do a whole lot for me. And I, you know, I really see that, you know, I'm happiest when I'm not in a relationship. And, and the person that I love most, and that I always forget when I'm seeing somebody, is Kari, my best friend. And from her I get so much. I mean, she gives me so much. She's the most wonderful person in the world. I don't know, I've learned so much from her. She's real sharp. She really helps me a lot with life and men and just everything. And she makes me feel good. She makes me feel happy. And, I mean, she helps me learn to love myself. And, you know, I'm beginning for the first time in my life to really care about myself and see how, and I see that I'm a good person and see that I'm worth something today. And I don't know, God, I can't even begin to describe how much of a change there's been in me. I mean, I used to be so fucking hopeless, so fucking miserable, and just lonely, and God, I hated myself. I thought I was disgusting. I thought nobody ever cared about me. And today I know that I'm a beautiful person inside and out, and, you know, I'm worthy of love and from, you know, myself and other people. And, God, it's the best fucking feeling in the world just to care about yourself. And, you know, I've learned a hell of a lot since I've been clean. And it's a continuous process of growing, and it is, it's so goddamn neat. I can't even begin to explain it. Let's see, right now in my life, I'm about to move back home to my mom's house, and I'm really worried about that. I'm really scared that my eating's gonna start getting bad again, and then I'm just gonna fight with my mom the whole time. But you know, I'm trying to have faith. I mean, I know it works, and I know it's gonna get better, and I know that I won't be living at home forever. And you know, there's not a whole lot I can do about it right now since I'm not there, so I'm gonna try not to worry about it. Well, let's see. I'm gonna talk about men for a second. Oh God, I met this guy a little while ago, about a month and a half ago. His name's Spike, and he's fucking beautiful. He blows my mind. Oh God, I met him at this club called The Fifth Column, and he was a bouncer there, and he's really big. He's about 5'9", 5'10". He's 205 pounds, and plays football. He just started going to SMU. He got a full scholarship to SMU for football. And he's the sweetest fucking person in the world. He's half white and half black, and he looks more black. And he dresses great, and he just really, I mean, I'm giving up men for a little while because it hurts too much and it's fucking me up. But I swear to God, if he was back here, I'd be with him in a second. But he's in Dallas right now, and on a more depressing note about Spike, he sent me a letter about 2 weeks ago, and the letter said that you know, by the time you get this letter, I'll be dead, and shit like that. He apparently tried to kill himself. Which, to this day, I'm still totally baffled, and I think it was a joke or something. Fucking's weird, because, God, it seems so not Spike. I mean, Spike is just so, he seems so full of life, so beautiful, so content, and so serene. But, hopefully one day, I would love, fucking one day, I would marry this man. I don't know, it was wild. I mean, getting just the fucking shock of getting a letter from somebody. And for a second after I read the letter, I had this picture in my mind. I could see him lying in a coffin, and for about a fucking minute, I thought this man was dead, and I almost threw up. I mean, God, I've never been so shocked in my life. Okay, I'm continuing again. Let's see. Let me think, what can I tell that's interesting about Michelle? I guess one of my newest revelations, is that, God, I don't know. know, for the first time in my life, I see the importance of Michelle living like on her own, not being enabled by a man or by my mother. Because all my life, you know, I've been enabled by it too, and especially lately with men. I mean, God, I'm so self-centered in how I, you know, my relationships with men. I mean, I go in, you know, for the primary purpose of getting things out of it, you know, material things or stuff like that. And I see now how, you know, that's another form of prostitution. And I did that a lot when I was using. When I was using, God, I had sex with so many fucking people. I lost even fucking count.
Hello?
You know, I see today how, you know, much more I'm worth than, just, you know, prostituting myself for just to get things, because it doesn't feel good anymore. It doesn't feel comfortable. And I feel really done talking to this. So I'm going to go ask Chris. I can stop.
We're back with Michelle. Feel free to talk about whatever you want.
You're supposed to help me.
Well, that's supposed to come from you.
Oh. No. Okay.
I'm just here for support.
Support. Ask me a question.
I did feel like growing up.
Suck. Yeah.
Okay, what about some positive things about your recovery?
I've already talked about that some, but, just like, I mean, God, everything. I mean, I feel like a totally different person. Let me think. I feel like I actually have a life. I'm gonna have a future. I feel like I can make decisions. I don't feel like a little girl anymore. For the majority of my life, I always felt like a little incompetent child. I couldn't make any decisions, couldn't do anything. And I thought I was gonna be in a mental hospital for the rest of my life. And it's nice to know that, you know, if I, you know, if I stay in this program, you know, I'm gonna have to be in the mental hospital again, hopefully. So that's really nice. What other gifts have I gotten? Even though I still have, you know, low self-confidence, I still care a lot, you know, much more about myself than I did when I was using. I mean, that's improved like 59%. It's, I don't know. It's great. Recovery's awesome.
You told me you threw up last night.
Uh-huh.
Why did you do that? Did you talk about that?
No. Because I was in shock. Because, I mean, it's like, to have somebody describe, what you've been doing and talk about how it feels, I mean, you know, relationship-wise, I mean, I've been doing this for months, and to have somebody, you know, say they're not gonna, you know, that they can't do this because it doesn't feel right to them, when it hasn't felt right to me all along, but I do it anyways because, you know I get, you know, free this, free that, clothes, or this or that, and that, you know, it's a big mistake that I do is I end up, you know, I see people, and if I don't really, really like them, just so I can get things from them. And just to hear some, I don't know, have somebody say it.
Say what?
Talk about, you should have been there. Talk about, that they can't just fuck people, and it doesn't feel comfortable, it doesn't feel right, and there's no common meeting ground, and there's nothing really there except sex, and, you know, sex is great, but not that great, and we can't hold, you know, you together for that long. So, and it's just really nice to hear, have someone say that they care about themselves enough and you enough to, you know, not be able to continue in a relationship with them. So that was nice.
But you're okay with the schedule
throw up? No, I didn't. It came up. I didn't binge. It just came up. Last time I binged about 2-3 days ago when I was up in New Jersey with Tom. For the first time in a long, long time. fucking trash.
Yeah, I mean, I've been, like, on the train right up to New Jersey. I felt really uncomfortable, and I knew what I was doing was wrong, but I figured I was going to go up there this weekend, I was going to have fun, we're going to drive back down, we're going to have fun, I was going to go up there next weekend, have fun, drive back down here, you know, go see the day, get, you know, some free tickets, and get some of this, get some of that, and just have fun, and, you know, it'd be over soon, so it wasn't any problem. But, well, I can't do that anymore, and I know it, so... And that for today.
Just for today?
Just for today. For out, and then hopefully. Just for today for about 3 or 4 more months.
Okay, what about your spiritual path?
My spiritual path? God, yes. See, I'm working right now on my first step. And that, you know, we've made their paths of our addiction, their lives have become unmanageable. And a lot of that, you know, is accepting and realizing the higher power and seeing how much power that they do have and how little I have. Even though, you know, there's a lot of the stuff that I absolutely hate. I mean, just I hate the idea of being powerless. You know, I want to be powerful. I want to be able to, you know, manipulate people, hurt people, and do this to people. And but I'm, you know, I'm beginning to see that it's not comfortable. And it's all just going to cause me a lot of pain, so... I mean, if I let it, being powerless is really freeing, and just, you know, spiritually, it's, I don't know, but, now as I see that, how much, you know, there is a higher power in my life, you know, it makes my life so much easier, because I, you know, just, like, letting go of everything, and not having to control everything, and, like, my favorite line, the first step is, surrender means not having to fight anymore. And that's what I've been doing my whole life, is trying to fight things and trying to control things. And so I'm beginning to see the, you know, how freeing it is just to let go and let something greater than myself take things.
You're doing great, keep on talking. This is life.
What else do I want now?
How do you face life?
How do I face life? Life's awesome. Life rocks. Life's totally... I mean, there's nothing... I mean, I don't have any problems. I haven't had any major problems in a long time. I mean, life's just so cool. There's nothing to be bummed out about. I mean, I have a place to live. I have food. I'm clean. So, life's too fucking cool. I mean, I can't bitch about anything. So, what the hell? I mean, I just... You know, life's great, people are great, I totally love people. Which is almost a problem, and, you know, because I meet so many people that I really like, and I think just because, like with guys, I mean, I was talking about this with Kari earlier today, just because you meet a guy that you like, and you get along with, and that you think's really nice, I mean, you know, like Kari and I meet tons of people that are nice, and that we get along with really well, doesn't mean we have to go out with every single one of them. So, and I have to learn to, like, pick and choose, and things like that, you know, from being in a relationship. And... can't be in a relationship with anyone else. I have to stop, so. I have to. It's going to drive me crazy. And, how about doing other? Well, I think I don't like it, and the thing I think is the biggest lie. Our best day, our worst day clean is better than our best day using. It's a lie. Total lie. Big lie. I've had such horrible days. God, when I lived at my mom's house, that was hell. I mean, because, you know, like once you're off the drugs and everything, and you start feeling things, you know, for the first time in your life, that sucks. So, the only flaw in the program. I'm gonna admit that part and it'll be perfect. So, what else? Let me start. Okay, you wanna hear, let's see, you wanna hear something gross? Bad things in hands that have been playing?
whatever you want.
Okay, mistakes Michelle's made since she's been coming. Let's see, I worked a bachelor party. The thing is, I was totally broke, and I was living at the apartment, and but I just needed money really badly, and a friend of mine in the program asked me if I wanted to do a favor for him. His old boss was getting married. His boss and about three or four friends of his, they'd rent a limousine, they were going to go do out and go all strip joints and everything for the night, and they wanted me to, you know, come out and hang with the guys and get married. And so, that was wild. That was really wild. So I got all dressed up and they picked me up and we just hung out and went to all these strip joints and I got, your mom to stop this?
Just keep talking.
Okay, and I got offered a whole bunch of jobs at these places. The only place I really liked was Joanne's. It was the nicest trip joint we went to, and I think I look back on it now and I see the whole thing as an experience. I mean, I'd never do it again. So if I know if I started doing it, I'd end up using. And my primary purpose is not to get money; it's to stay clean. So I think I can stand being poor for a while, just as long as I'm comfortable with myself and I'm clean. But let's see, other bad thing Michelle does.
Okay, Michelle. Talk about the merry man.
He's in the program, and I met him about a month ago. And I guess I knew him because he might know who he is.
Have you slept with the married man?
Just twice. That's it. And the second time I told him I wasn't going to do it anymore.
Who?
He's not important.
No, I don't want him messing around with you.
You don't know who he is.
Okay, just keep talking.
He's the kind of guy he's the kind of guy I used to date when I was using. I mean, he's really kind of unclean, and he rides a motorcycle and wears black leathers, and God, he was nuts, but he was fun, and he was fucking awesome as shit in bed, and he's really nice, he's really fun to talk to. I mean, he's kind of immature, but it wasn't bad, it was a good time, but after a second time, I felt uncomfortable and I didn't want to do it anymore, so I told him I wasn't going to sleep with him ever again. And so that was the end of that. Let's see, what other bad things have I done?
Michelle, just talk about bad things, and hopefully we didn't erase the first episode.
No kidding. Let's see, what else have I done bad? Okay, I had a good one.
You can also talk about the good things you've done. Balance it off.
Okay,
and I'll come and get to you in 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let me think. This is the last of the bad things I've done. I was dating this guy, who's in the program. We've been seeing each other about 2 months, and he ended up, he slept with somebody else, and he ended up being really guilty about it, and he didn't tell me. So what he did was, he arranged things that, he thought that if I slept with somebody else, he would feel better. So one night we were at a meeting right by my house, and he asked if I'd fool around with his best friend, and who at the time had just broken up with his girlfriend. Had been broken up about 2 or 3 days, and we were both really miserable about it. And so my boyfriend at the time, Kenny, brought his friend over and another girl, and on the way over, we're all like, yeah, let's have a catch up, and we're going to do this and that. And it ended up being just two twosomes, and it was Kenny and I, and so the girl and Kenny's friend. And Kenny asked if I'd fool around his friend, and I said okay, and I ended up fooling around his friend. And we really didn't do anything, but the outcome was fucking hell. I mean, his old girlfriend found out, and it was just a big fucking mess. But it's another thing I did that I'm never gonna fucking do again in my recovery, hopefully. But can we talk about the good things for a little bit? Let me think. The good things I've done, I've done a lot of them. I almost graduated high school after one short story for this creative writing class I had. Graduated high school. I have a job now. I'm working as a secretary for a friend of mine in the program. And I love my job. I really like it. I'm starting to look towards the future, and
you know, put my, you know, plans and dreams into action, start taking steps to, making my dreams come true. And, it feels really good. I mean, right now at this point, I want to design clothes. Or do something with art when I get older. You know, I'm gonna start when I get home. I'm gonna start using my mom's sewing machine and sewing up some things and start getting more into my artwork and start working really hard and try to get my driver's license. And, you know, I'm just basically getting my life back together and trying to move ahead and doing the things I've always wanted to do. And it feels really good. I mean, it's really nice to know that I can accomplish things and, you know, have a life today. So, I think it's the end of the tape.